Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Cannabis Insider. We are in for a special episode, as everyone might know. We have some really, really important news. And if it's your first time tuning in, I'm Pat Little, and with me is the always shining Abby Higginbotham. This is our first live show, actually, so exciting stuff here. And we, as you know, we are your trusted source for the latest cannabis news and analysis. And today, as I said, we're tackling a big historic development from Washington.
That's right, Pato. The DEA is on the verge of reclassifying marijuana. So huge news. So this is shifting from Schedule 1, a category reserved for substances like heroin, with no acceptance for medical use or high, and it has a high potential of abuse, to a Schedule 3. So this category includes drugs like certain steroids or other currently common medically used drugs, so which are considered to have a lower potential for abuse and some acceptable medical use. So this could really open doors across the board, from enabling more robust medical research and reducing legal hurdles for business to potentially kind of lessening the criminal penalties associated with cannabis. It's a change that I think could alter how everyone from growers to consumers interact with benefits from the cannabis industry.
Exactly. That's a great summary, Avi. And well, to break down this news, we are actually joined by Ben York, CEO of Genetica, Nicolas Guarani, founder and CEO of Nature LLC, and Sandy Seyfried, CEO of Safe Harbor Financial. And lastly, but last but not least, Brady Cobb, CEO of Samber Cannabis. So as you can see, we have a stacked show, starting off with Ben York, whose company is pioneering an advanced retail technology in the cannabis space with their system, Flora. And I'm looking forward to this one, just hearing his understanding of the broader implications of this policy change. And this is part of our ongoing commitment to keeping you at the forefront of monumental cannabis developments like this.
Exactly, Pato. And so without further ado, let's jump in. Ben, it is great to have you here with us. Big day for news. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's an exciting day. It's something that we've all been waiting for months now. And, you know, we weren't really sure which way it was going to go, but glad to see that they made the right choice.
Absolutely. And so, you know, we'll jump into that. But first off, you know, we gave an introduction, but for our listeners and viewers who may not know the name Ben York, which how dare you, and Genetica, you gotta tell us a little bit more about the company and what you do.
Yeah. So Genetica is a retail tech platform using AI to help retailers make more informed decisions. We're both collecting more data about the customers who's shopping in store, why they're shopping in store, what they're looking for as well, preferences, all that kind of stuff. But then we're also harnessing all of the data that they're generating anyway, from the POS, inventory, e-commerce, HR, whatever they've got. We're pulling it all into one place so they can just get one screen to look at, one place to gather all their information, and then layering in that customer data too to help make more informed decisions.
And thank you for, you know, breaking that down. And I want to get into cannabis and technology, but like we said, there is some news that we can't ignore. So let's jump in with the DEA news. So can you kind of, you know, from your understanding, explain the reclassification and your initial reactions to this development?
Yeah, I think it helps to give some historical context too, right? So cannabis as a Schedule 1 substance never really made any sense. It was classified, as you said earlier, along the lines of heroin, high potential for abuse, no medical viability, which we all know is not accurate. So the reclassification was well overdue. It puts it on the same level as, like you, as you said earlier, steroids, ketamine, other drugs that are prescribed, medical use accepted. And so really excited to see how this changed the landscape from a research perspective too, and accessibility on the research side. And then from a business standpoint too, relieving the burden of 280E. It's going to be a major, major lift to cannabis companies across the country. I'm just excited to have that kind of, it's the first time in a long time that the cannabis industry has had the wind in our backs, and really excited to see you know, what companies are able to do with that free cash flow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And before we get into like more the more operational side of business, from a technological standpoint, Ben, will this regulatory shift open up new industry innovation opportunities, for example, or what adjustments should businesses be considering now?
Potentially, you might start to see some of the more established tech companies outside of cannabis start to dabble in the space. I think that'll take a little bit of time for them to really get comfort. From what I've heard, it may not shift the landscape on banking anytime soon. I think that change will come in the not too distant future. And I think tech companies are probably following a similar path. But the thing to keep in mind as well is that the cannabis tech landscape is very much designed to fit the needs of a very difficult industry with a lot of weird nuances, right? And so for other tech companies to kind of come in, there's going to be a pretty steep learning curve. So for operators, I would say, you know, pay attention to the companies that you're already working with. You know, don't be distracted by that new shiny object, because while they may be established outside of cannabis, they may not understand the complexities and the challenges that you face every day, like, you know, the cannabis companies, cannabis tech companies that have stood by you for the past few years.
I think that's, you know, a great sentiment. And, you know, at this point, this is so fresh, this is so new, you know, we're making guesses here. But I want to, let's move into Genetica a little bit. So tell us more about Flora. Like, how does it integrate into cannabis and CBD retail environments? And maybe what problems does it kind of solve for those same people, retailers and customers?
Yeah, I think thinking about the customer side first, and so we have two products, Flora Match and Flora OS, and Flora Match is really designed to be that product recommendation tool. We really describe it as a sales tool. You know, there's a lot of companies out there that are focused on AI bud tender application. You know, we're not here to replace employees. We're here to augment. We're here to be a sales tool to help foster real engagement with customers. So the immediate impact is increase in sales, increase in basket size, increase in loyalty, all that good stuff that really matters to retailers. I mean, understandably so. But the kind of knock-on effect of that is you understand your customers better. So you can speak to them more articulately about their needs. You can help to retarget them better. You can just really foster more engagement with that customer base. And loyalty is something that all retailers are looking for, right? So any way to incrementally improve that is going to be a big win. On the Flora OS side, like I mentioned earlier, it's really about harnessing the data that retailers are already generating in the store day to day. So, you know, their POS is throwing off a lot of information about transactions, customer inventory, all of the, you know, purchasing habits. And it's really about making the most out of that information so that, again, in layering in the added customer data, we're able to help make more informed decisions. Like, you know, maybe reordering that product isn't a great idea because it has an artificially high velocity because, you know, it's associated with a BOGO deal, right? You know, avoiding those kind of mistakes to really fine tune operations. And I mean, we've been focused on this since before the regulatory changes too, but I always think about it as like, you know, improving the top line and watching the bottom line as well. And again, with a little bit more free cash flow there too, I'm really excited to see the growth that we're going to be able to stimulate through these products as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And we're actually just have one quick follow-up question regarding customer data, because I mean, as AI systems handle so much sensitive customer data, what measures does Genetica take to ensure privacy and data security?
Yeah, what I would say is from day one, we've had a very, very high standard for data security, and that's through a number of different factors. I don't want to give away too much because the more I say, the more it potentially opens this up for vulnerability. What I will say, though, is that we are working with groups in the EU where there are even higher standards for data privacy and data security, especially within Germany. And so we take those standards over there and apply them here as well. So we're not just operating based on, you know, what's, you know, required in the US. This is more of a global standard that we're applying here in the US too.
I kind of want to dive into that a little bit. So, like, you know, we know that although it facilitates and speeds up transactions, sometimes AI makes mistakes or it can be biased. So, like, how does the company personalize the shopping experience without bias?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I would argue the opposite. I would argue that the budtenders are the ones that are biased, and it's subconscious, right? Like, they're not, you know, they're not intentionally selling products based on what they, you know, what they favor, or they just don't know the customer that closely, right? And so what we do is we ask a handful of quick questions, takes at max a minute and a half to fill out the intake form. We look at the inventory and the COA level data. So we're looking at all the cannabinoids and terpenes. We're taking that information and reflecting it off of our own internal database and the customer selections to make those recommendations. So there really is no bias in that. It's purely scientific. We're just looking at based on the COA level data and that intake form. Our goal is to do just that, remove the bias. You know, where you see some platforms that are promoting, you know, different products, sponsored products, paid promotions to get higher up on you know, ranking on menus, things like that, we eliminate all of that. And I think that helps to breed, you know, foster trust within the customers as well. And you know, when they see products that they've purchased before in there too, they know immediately, like, oh, this gets me. This knows me on a very personal level, and that's part of where we build that trust as well.
Just a comment to that, really quick. Yeah, no, I think a lot in general with shopping consumer experiences, a lot of consumers are wary of recommended or technology like this, in sense that they want something that's genuine. They want something that is catered to them. So it seems like this is what you all are doing and, you know, working on, and it's fascinating.
Yeah. You know, it's exactly right. Whether it's previously purchased items or customers also bought, you know, those kind of like Amazon frequented, pop-ups there too, right? It's the same kind of shopping habits too. So we're just, you know, taking the best practices from other e-commerce platforms, well-known established brands, and bringing them to the cannabis industry, trying to bring us to the, you know, to the, 2024 here.
Thank you, man. That's really very interesting. I was already thinking on how does your AI systems work on, and then I was also trying to relate that with the actual feedback from customers. And we were curious about the feedback you received from the market. How are businesses and customers responding to Flora, and maybe what improvements or impacts have they reported?
It's really cool to see customers' faces light up when they understand like what's going on. You know, I think that part of our differentiator is how we engage with the consumers. You know, we've designed it to be fully agnostic, because every store operates a little bit differently, right? And so depending on how that store operates, you know, we're always at the front of the transaction, right? It's the first thing that potentially that they're interacting with at that store, whether it's online or in the brick and mortar environment. And so when they understand, like, oh, this is helping me navigate a pretty difficult environment, like, you know, I don't know what the difference is between, you know, these two different vape cartridges, and we're able to articulate that to them too, right? We're actually providing rationale for why these products are recommended. So customers are seeing, like, oh yeah, I have anxiety and this, you know, provides a relief for that, or I have joint pain and this topical is helping relieve there. That having that rationale to help customers understand why these products are the right fit for them, again, just goes even further to breeding that loyalty and increasing the basket size too. Because if you think that this product is tailored for you, and you know, there's never such a thing as a perfect match, right? But it's about just as much avoiding the adverse interactions as fostering positive ones as well.
And thank you. Ben, two more questions for you. Lastly, just how critical do you think technology is like this? Obviously, maybe you're a little biased about your company, but will become in like shaping the future of cannabis retail, how people buy, what trends should maybe we watch for in the tech space as the industry matures?
Yeah, you know, I think I'll go back to the point I mentioned briefly at the end is the avoiding the adverse interactions. You know, the majority of transactions in the industry are from repeat consumers, or the heaviest consumers make up, you know, the bulk of the volume, right? But how do we bring in the kind of curious, the customers that maybe are interested but not really sure where to start? And so I think so many companies have and retailers too, and brands are focused on that education piece, and it's really hard to educate consumers. You know, it's really hard. These are complicated products. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to see what the next frontier of that education looks like. I think we play a part in that, in, again, with that rationale and showing why products are a good fit for X, Y, and Z reasons. And hopefully over time that gets reinforced and other brands start to follow that similar pattern, because it's really, really hard for newbies to kind of figure out the landscape. And I'm sure we all have stories of, you know, friends that tried products and got way too high and it turned them off for good. And that really hurts the industry overall. You know, the regulatory changes can only do so much if people are turned off to products because they didn't get the right thing.
I love that you bring up the amount of times I've heard somebody be like, I tried an edible and it was terrifying. And exactly. They're like, it's just not for me. I agree with that sentiment. It does turn off people. In Missouri, where I am at, where things have just been legalized, and you know, within the last year, so many people are trying cannabis for the first time. They don't know what to get. They don't know where to start. And so edibles seem like an easy choice. You don't have to roll anything, et cetera, but they don't know their dosage.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like I said, we all have those kind of stories. You know, a friend of mine was in San Francisco and it had very specific criteria, right? You know, couldn't have an edible because allergic to the sugar in gummies, so needed a capsule and wanted high CBD. Well, taking in that criteria, the bud tender gave a capsule that was high CBD and you know, what was actually a ratio and very high THC as well. And my friend had no understanding of those kind of ratios, that what she was consuming, yes, was high in CBD, but it's also way, way, way too high in THC. Luckily, I was there. But, you know, for someone in a new city where they're trying new products, that's really dangerous. And what we certainly don't want to see is like negative headlines around just that exact experience. New city, trying new products because it's legal, and getting into a bad situation. So, yeah, just hoping to help people navigate more effectively.
Yeah, exactly. And I like you highlight that. I mean, it's very important that at this point in the industry where we are at the verge of really big changes, that we give the right impression to people that are maybe, as you said, newbies, or that are outside of the cannabis industry or without any knowledge. So I just had one. Sorry, Abby.
No, I was like, anyone who is watching, who watches in the future, rewatches the live stream, know that we are not judging you if you're a newbie.
Yeah, yeah, not at all.
Yeah, exactly. Of course.
Somewhere. Yeah.
No, sure. No.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and the opposite thing. I mean, we want this industry to welcome newbies and to welcome people that don't know the plant and its derivatives and that really feel that there's an opportunity for their health and their well-being here. So it's better to do things well from the beginning. I just had one last question, because you mentioned that the rescheduling of cannabis might open, and this is also, of course, something that we see, will open a lot of cash flow for companies, possibly or hopefully. So I wanted to ask you if what specific areas in Genetica could maybe capitalize on these changes, and maybe also if you have an idea of how the broader industry could capitalize on these new cash flow opportunities.
It's a good question. I think that the number one thing for the broader industry, to answer that part first, is that hopefully it relieves the bad debt issues and the payment issues between vendors within the supply chain. That's a common concern that I hear across the board, especially in California, where there are some vendors that don't pay on time or pay ever. And, you know, we've heard of some companies going under because they've, you know, provided too much product on credit and haven't been able to get paid back. And so hopefully that additional free cash flow helps to alleviate that issue and helps to keep more companies alive and, instead of unfortunate we're seeing where they're struggling and barely keeping their head above water. From a genetic standpoint, it'll be interesting to see how it evolves, because when we're taking in financial information and looking at the financial data, it's been in an environment where this hasn't been allowed, right? The 280E is in effect. And so we're going to have to adapt as well and apply traditional retail business practices to this setting. And it's a situation that none of us have encountered before. So I'm excited to see what our system is able to recommend in that area in this new environment, because there could be a lot of creative solutions to help customers manage their inventory or employees or whatever else better with these restrictions lifted.
That's a very insightful answer. Thank you.
Sorry, we pile on some questions. We're really interested in this. And yeah. I do have a final question for you. It's just listeners of today, listeners who, you know, come back to the episode, is just, what is one takeaway from the news that we're learning, plus, you know, learning more about your technology, that you want our viewers, again, to take away?
I think, you know, from the news yesterday, my takeaway is, great, we'll take the win. It's fantastic. It's about time. It's not quite going far enough, and we'll see how long the next phase of change takes to implement. But we got to take the wins where we can get them, because they're unfortunately in short supply in this industry. And so this is a major one, should be celebrated, but let's not get complacent. Let's keep pushing for what we know needs to happen at the federal level anyway. And we'll see how long it takes to impact that. I think from a company standpoint too, just excited to work with as many retailers as we can across the space, from, you know, dispensaries to CBD stores, in-store, online, like, connect with us. We're so excited to get our products into the hands of as many retailers as possible. Spread the good word. And I think part of that too is making, you know, AI is already mainstream, but there's a lot of apprehension around that too. And so we want to help to demystify that, again, make it less of a scary topic, because we're here to help businesses, not replace people, all of that good stuff.
Yeah. Well, blending AI and cannabis, it's all a big challenge. So we know Genetica is up for that. And how can viewers reach you, retailers, customers, how can they find you?
Yeah, feel free to reach out to me on email. I love to connect with everyone. I'm just ben@getgenetica.com. Also, LinkedIn is great too. I have an active LinkedIn page, so please connect with me there, over email, whatever. I'd love to hear from you. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been really interesting. I know we kept you a little bit longer than having this conversation, and thank you for sharing your time, your knowledge, and our listeners, I know they appreciate the in-depth information.
Appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
Of course. Until next time, see you, Ben. Have a good day.
You too.
All right, this is a very exciting episode, isn't it, Abby?
I think I love so. That we're doing... Sorry, are we? Ahead. Yeah, no. I think Ben's still on with us. I was like, we'd love to still have him on, we can tend to the chat, but that is the fun part about being live, guys. This is, again, our first time being live, me and Pato, for Cannabis Insider, and it's exciting. This news today, you know, there's multiple things that we could look into the future, assume, you know, but Pato, I guess, what are your thoughts on this? Where are you coming from? What was your first reactions, I guess, when hearing about this?
I'm actually happy that we have such a diverse set of guests, because we are going to analyze this news from, I mean, as we just did, from a cannabis technology company that blends, again, AI retail, as we just saw. Then we're going to be speaking with an OG cannabis retailer with a lot of experience in cannabis commerce. And also we're going to speak from a more industrial standpoint with our next interviewee, and also from a financial standpoint. So again, pretty much all sides of the discussion will be covered. And my feelings around this is, I think that Ben just summarized it pretty well. We're on an excellent spot in terms of the news that we were waiting for. But we have a huge way to go. I mean, we still need to wait until this regulatory shift is officialized, because again, there's nothing yet on paper as far as I know, unless there's something breaking, but it's just again more confirmed rumors than all things. But yeah, it's definitely good news, and it's definitely going to open a new stage, a new era maybe for the cannabis industry. And as Ben said, hopefully this is not an era that demands another, I don't know, 5-10 years until we get the next good news.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. You know, it's interesting. We don't normally have the time to kind of go into our opinions. I know that you all listen to us ask, you know, experts the detailed questions that you want to know. But maybe you want to know what we know too. I don't know. Maybe you don't, but we'll share. But I think we just need to watch what's going to happen. I'm not going to have any definitive opinions on anything until it does happen. This is just news that is breaking as of mm-hmm. yesterday of that will be the move. But again, this is leaked information. You know, we have to see what happens in the next couple months, et cetera. So I don't know. It's good news. I've also seen online actually some counterpoints too that, you know, we're definitely going to ask some of the next guests, but this is huge. I'm
actually very interesting to I mean, the thing that one of the main things that's still over the table is that there, I mean, the many contradictions that still exist between federal law and state laws, which the scheduling the reschedule to schedule 3 will not solve. So again, I'm eager to know what our next guests think, but at least from, as someone who lives in Argentina, and as some of our viewers already know, I'm from Argentina, and here from this part of the world, we are watching what happens in the US very closely, because for example, here for the last 3 years, we have a really fast evolving regulatory framework going towards legalization. And then everything started to slow down a lot, especially this year with the new government. So with this news coming from the US, that again, suddenly the country that made that came up with all these prohibition regulations is actually going backwards, and is going to, it's giving like clear signals that is going to go towards legalization. I think that's also going to accelerate things around the world. And that's actually another thing I want to know from our guests. I mean, how do they think this will impact on a global scale?
I think all eyes are on the US right now, for sure. We do have a treat for you though. OG host of Cannabis Insider is going to join us for a little bit, kind of talk about this too. He knows the ins and outs of the cannabis industry as well. So without further ado, Javier Hase. Hello, how are you?
Javier? What's up? I'm wearing a celebratory shirt today.
We talked with Abby when we were preparing the show, if we should wear some like more 420, according to the date, but yes, I think you actually exceeded all expectations.
This is a perfect, yeah, no, thank you.
We were conservative.
The shirt, it's perfect.
That's good. The hosts have to be more serious, but I'm a guest now.
Exactly. So how are you feeling with this news, Javi?
Cautiously optimistic, as per usual with these things. I mean, it does seem that this time around, it's the real deal. But, you know, a lot of people have been asking me, like, is this legalization? You know, for clarity, it is not legalization, right? It does not legalize cannabis on the federal level, but it does place it in a lower category of enforcement, right? It does recognize the medical benefits. I'm sure you've discussed all of this, right? It opens avenues for new research. It opens the possibility of cannabis products being sold in pharmacies, not just Epidiolex, right? Mm. But you know, some of the things that were interesting, I got a lot of questions about this, but one of the most recurring ones was related to gun rights for some reason, which, I mean, to me is a very foreign topic. But last week I was in Puerto Rico, right, for instance, Puerto Rico is a part of the U.S. It is, you know, it has a special status, but it is a part of the U.S., right? People are citizens. They have the U.S. dollar as their currency, and they are governed by the U.S. Constitution, right? And I was asking a lot of people, you know, there's a very widespread and very successful, in my view, medical cannabis program in Puerto Rico, where people apply for a medical cannabis card and can get, you know, cannabis legally at dispensaries. And I was asking a lot of people, you know, hey, if you smoke weed, why don't you have the medical card? And most of them were answering the same thing. And it was because I have to choose between having a legal gun or having, you know, medical right. cannabis permit, right? You cannot do both, right? And this is federal law, right? Under the gun control laws and you know, stipulated in American law, people who are using controlled substances do not, you know, are not allowed to carry guns legally. And a lot of people asked me yesterday, will that change, right? And I was looking into it, and it's uncertain, right? It might or might not impact this, but as of right now, things remain the same, right? If you are using a controlled substance, you cannot have a gun legally. It remains to be seen, right? Though the fact that it goes to Schedule 3 does change the situation a little bit. But my response in general to all of the questions I got, and we can get into others later, was, you know, this is just a move to reschedule cannabis. But we'll have to see then what the Attorney General says in relation to regulations, yeah. what the you know, lawmakers say as they roll out new regulations, right? The biggest impact of rescheduling really relates to research and taxes, right? Mm-hmm. On the one hand, there will be more avenues for research, but that research will be very likely overseen by the DEA and very likely use DEA approved supply for any of this research. It will also, you know, get the DEA, I think, involved in some capacity. And then the other one is, of course, it very likely removes the burden of 280E, right? 280E. Yeah. Is part of the U.S. Tax code under the IRS. And what it does, it mandates very heavy tax burdens on businesses or people operating with Schedule 1 or Schedule 2 substances. And what this means is most cannabis businesses can't deduct the most normal, regular business expenses that any other business would be able to deduct from taxes. And that ultimately results in very, very high tax burdens for cannabis businesses. And of course, you know, the rescheduling would mean that or should mean that 280E no longer applies because, you know, Schedule 3 substances have a different status under this tax code. However, it is also very likely that we see new federal excise taxes similar to those in alcohol or tobacco being considered for marijuana as it moves to a Schedule 3 drug as well. There were several other questions that I got from the people, but I think we'll answer them on benzinga.com/cannabis, your source of daily cannabis news.
I was actually going to ask you if this news was like something that was vibing in the CCC, in the cannabis conference. It something that people anticipated?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, there was a lot of discussion, even, you know, Perlmutter, we had Ed Perlmutter as one of the speakers, and he mentioned he was even expecting a decision that week or the following week. And, you know, well, it's 2 weeks after, but very likely we're seeing something this week or next. However, then till it takes effect, from what I heard from experts, we would have to wait probably till the end of this year. But while we're here, bzcannabis.com, we're coming back with another big conference in Chicago on October 8 and 9. And we will have policymakers, you know, current and former policymakers and the top industry players, analysts, lawyers, investors, sharing their insights on what's next. What is the future of cannabis under a rescheduled scenario. but very interesting stuff. And then, you know, the other very interesting conversation I had at our last cannabis conference in Florida was a fireside with Jason Wiles, who's the chairman of TerrAscend and I think it's portfolio manager or managing partner at JW Asset Management, right? Mm-hmm. And he is one of the main supporters of the lawsuit against the federal government, which is headed by David Boies. And Dave Boies, for those who don't know, is often seen as the person responsible for the legalization of same-sex marriage in America. He took on Microsoft, even, you know, what magazine, I can't remember who, but someone called him the guy who ate Microsoft. He represented Al Gore as well. So, you know, he has an impressive track record as a constitutional lawyer, and he is challenging the federal government on their interference with state legal cannabis programs. However, you know, rescheduling might change that a little bit, but I think, you know, these are two initiatives happening at the same time, and either one of them could imply a huge change for the cannabis industry and especially for patients in America.
Javier, you've very well said. I think we will definitely come back to you. Actually, we might just have you on later again to talk more about it. But that is it for right now. We have to jump to our next guest. But thank you so much for coming in for your input.
Thank you, Javier. We love you. We love your shirt too, man. See you later.
Love you too. Keep up the great work, guys.
Bye. All right. Now moving on to our next guest. I'm really excited about this one. Pata?
That's right. Well, next joining us is Nicolas Guarani, founder and CEO of Natural LLC. And I think we have him already, right, Aaron? Or Godly
our
producer, are you there?
You can't see in the background. Nicolas, or go by Nick.
Yeah, Nick is good.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. Excited. Very exciting times, right? I was just listening to Jesse, to your last guest there, and super, super knowledgeable in the thing, learning a little bit. Like every 5 or 10 minutes that I open LinkedIn, I get a new perspective or a new opinion on the implications of this big move. So yeah.
That was Javier Hase. So if you want to know even more, make sure to check out for all his content on Benzinga. He is an expert in the space. But we wanted to jump in a conversation with you, Pato. Take it away.
Yeah. Thank you, Avi. So, I mean, to start things out, please, for people that maybe this is the first time that hears about Natural, how can you tell us a little bit more, you and your company and about what you do?
Yeah. So I don't know how much you guys know about the New York market, but our company is kind of like a classic New York market story. We started in CBD. Us personally, we're very focused on extraction in CBD because in CBD, it was really a volume game and how much oil can you produce with rapidly decreasing prices. And we took that experience of extraction and we're lucky enough to get into the THC side here in New York when Rec opened. So Naturae right now is a distributor in New York, offering our in-house brands, which are Jaunty and Resonators, and then a couple of brands that we license that we have a partnership with in New York. So we're like, our brand Jaunty is like number five in the state right now. There's a ton of growth, a ton of excitement, big changes on the tax structure here in New York, like literally a week ago, when they passed the budget here. So we're getting this like double whammy of potentially huge tax benefits, like while our company went from being a 3 or 4 million a year company to now like a 20 million a year company very quickly when we transitioned to THC and still growing. So that's the story. We're New York, 100% New York. We're not in any other states right now. And we sell all oil-based products. And this attempt to kind of close the gap of flavor and effects in between flower products and flower experience and oil-based products.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Yeah. And well, with DEA's recent decision marking a historic shift for the cannabis industry and again, reclassifying cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3, based on your experience, what do you think prompted this change now after such a long period of stringent classification?
That's a good question. I feel like it's been in the works for forever, right? Like year after year, either SAFE was supposed to go through, something was supposed to happen. And I hate to say that it's like, it seems like the very simple explanation that like the current incumbent president wants to have make progress in significant places that are going to kind of be popular. So I think the timing is very much related to the election cycle. And then I think the first thing I did, because there's been so much talk about moves happening in cannabis. And when I first see it on LinkedIn, I'm like, yeah, whatever. You know, like it probably didn't even happen. In this case, it was from the AP. So I was like, okay, it's from the AP. It must be legit. And I went right away to look at all of the big public companies, right? I looked up like GTI, Trulieve, TerrAscend, which Javier just mentioned. And the moves I saw, it was 1 p.m. and like by 1:30, all of the stocks had gone up 30, 40%. And we're not talking like, it's like hundreds of millions and billions of dollars within a few hours. I was like, okay, so this is really legit. Let me try to figure out like, what are the implications for us, a tiny player here and then one single state. And I talked to Vince from Nabis, who's one of the smartest people I know and like really sees the big picture. And I kind of agree with him that it's like the main implication here is like cash flow and margin. Like it's pretty simple and kind of boring, but basically all producers who are not at a store level, right, and are essentially supplying, they're going to gain like 5 to 8% margin right away under like most standard things, and that's already a huge number. Yep. But then everybody who has stores, which most of these MSOs do, right? Like most of their models are, we've got 25 stores in Massachusetts, 18 in Pennsylvania, whatever it might be, they're going to gain like up to 30% margin just like with that happening. So I don't think it was unexpected. Like you're already seeing Trulieve, TerrAscend file for returns and file as though 280E didn't exist. Clearly they saw the writing on the wall. And you saw the chairman of Curaleaf on TV, Ben Kovler from GTI on TV, saying that they expect it coming within months. And when you look at the stock price of like, I don't know, let's just use a random one that I can remember right now, like Canopy, it was like $5 in January. Then this expectation was coming and it was like $10 yesterday. So it doubled already from January to today just on the expectation. And now it's $15. So it's tripled in like the past 3 months, 4 months. Yeah. So investors are very excited. That's the biggest thing here. It's just like one more step to make cannabis businesses like actually viable and part of the mainstream business industries and sectors that investors can look at. It's still not like safe banking. It's not like money is just going to like pour in, but private investors are definitely going to find it a lot more attractive to look for opportunities now. I would if I had the money to invest in other states, you know.
It's an insane jump to see. I mean, yesterday, just like news after news after news coming into this, like you've mentioned. And you also mentioned this move is seen as like monumental. So if it were to happen, but doesn't resolve the state federal conflict. So I kind of want to get into that. Can you kind of discuss the ongoing divide that might affect the cannabis industry, particularly in terms of like compliance and operations across different states?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's hard for me to even understand like half the time how some of these companies, the ones that don't have an asset light model, like, cause if you're an old pal and you're a brand, the model is basically meant for this state by state structure. But if you're us, right, and you need to be vertically integrated for some of the end products that we're trying to make that are closing this gap between oil and flour, and it's critical for us to make our own products, I can't see how we could set up like a vertically integrated organization in every single one of the states in the country. For us, like in our case, the move is just like you need to build a significant market share and presence in a big market. And we're lucky enough to be starting in New York, and then kind of wait for federal legalization so that you can expand in a rational way. Like certainly we could expand to like Massachusetts and New Jersey, potentially in a semi-rational way, but to really hit like all 24 states and be making a meaningful margin, right? Like 25%, 20% margin at the end of the year. in the current like state by state structure, as you're saying, it's very, very tough with a vertically integrated model. Yeah.
Thank you for that insight. It's a really complex puzzle to solve. And actually, considering the broader economic implications, how do you think this might, I mean, that the reclassification might impact the financial landscape? Because you mentioned, again, with maybe safer Bank Connect out of the game, at least for now, but with the possible removal of 280E burdens, are we looking at potential boosts in investments or expansions maybe?
Yeah, I think so. When you look at, again, like what we were talking about now with all of that money pouring into the big MSOs and then in smaller, I'm sure there's going to be smaller examples over the next few months. It's just the margin game. Like if you were running as efficiently as you could right now, but you were just breaking even, suddenly your business has like an 8 or 10% margin. So you can go out and justify getting loans, but what's not going to change is like how difficult it is, the structure of the deals that cannabis companies are still going to have to go through. You're still going to be looking at super high interest loans. It's just that you're going to have the cash flow now to actually go out and convince an investor that you can pay them back on the loans.
Right.
So I think the latest number I saw was that like year to date investments in cannabis so far have been around 100 million this year versus like 2020, which was close to like a billion, 2019, 2020. It's basically completely dried up. It's 80, 90% down investment into the cannabis space. I don't think I could sit here and predict how much it's going to go up, but I'm going to guess it's going to go up 2-3 fold. You know, it's going to be in a 4-month period, $200-300 million. How that spread, who are the winners of it? We'll see. I think the number one thing is now like you can actually, as a cannabis company, prove via numbers that you can have staying power. And as we've seen, all like MedMen just went bankrupt, right? So as you see, like all these big brands that you're like, oh, these are going to be here forever, the Apple of cannabis, whatever. If you don't have a margin and you can't attract investment, you're not going to have staying power. Like what I've been telling our sales team is like, look, I'd rather you just sell less. When they talk to me about lowering prices, I'd rather you just sell less and us maintain a margin and do less paperwork, but stay here for the next 10 years. Because the industry overall is going to grow, and as long as we don't fall off of it and disappear, we should follow that growth, right? Just like an ETF, or just keep a margin, and we'll make the right decisions as the challenges come. Because there's going to be a ton of challenges, but I think it's staying power, and that's what this is sort of created a real opportunity for. Is like cannabis companies that are worried about margin to keep some staying power. And sorry to ramble, but last thing is like there is also a devil's advocate argument to say that what's going to happen here is that this is just going to get passed down to the consumer, any kind of tax savings here, and prices are just going to go even further down, right? Without any kind of consideration for the form factor or the effects of the thing. You know, if you sell a gummy bag for $10 and a single gummy is $1 with 50 milligrams in, you're selling like two highs for a dollar.
Right.
Nobody sells a beer for less than $3 or $4. So there's like these form factor to effect things that I think eventually the market and the companies that go down in price and disappear from the market is going to rationalize, but it's going to be another, I don't even know, 3 to 5 years or longer until all the companies in cannabis are like, we're here to make money. I know that sounds dirty and bad. Like,
No. That's how the industry grows.
We love it. I spoke it too much. But we're here to make money, and it's not about market share, and it's not about headset numbers and doing the MedMen move of just expand and grow. And eventually we'll have a margin, because this is not the tech industry. Like this is an agriculture industry, and it requires inputs that have a certain cost and outputs to be sold with a margin. So anyway, that's kind of my, yeah.
One thing before I jump into the next question, this is why you're on. Please ramble. We want to hear, you're an expert. We want to hear your thoughts on this. And second, we were talking about, it's about money. You know, I know we're Benzinga, finance, et cetera. It's about also the consumer experience. So that's kind of jumping into my next question is like, Normal's deputy director commented on a public and federal acknowledgement of cannabis as a therapeutic agent as well. So what I want to know in your opinion is, like, how significant is this acknowledgement for the industry's ability to market and develop cannabis products, especially those focused on health benefits?
I think it's huge. I mean, we try to be super careful with, like, the claims that we're making on products, and we come from CBD where, like, serious claims are made on products. And so when I saw it, I'm like, well, of course it's got therapeutic benefits, right? But I think because I've been consuming it since I was 12 or 13, but I think for most of America, it's sort of like this formalization of it, and like, okay, this is it hangs in, like, the entire country's subconscious kind of thing, and it's back there. And if the government is saying that this has no potential medical benefit, then, like, going and pitching somebody for a research study on what CBN can do or what CBG does is a lot harder. I mean, the federal government doesn't even recognize this for you, so why would I give you a grant? Why would I give you money? So I guess my point is, like, we still have a bunch to learn about the medical benefits of THC, and then of the different cannabinoids, and then of the terpenes and how they interact with them. I think the most important part that it does is that it's going to open more doors for research so that we can learn more. And then in terms of marketing the products, I don't know, it's kind of wild out there. We'll see. Yeah. We do our best for sure to market stuff that us ourselves as the management team and the production team has really felt with the product, kind of across the board. But outside of that, it's just, like, super anecdotal right now. We need more money in research. We need more money in research. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And, we're actually going to, I mean, you just gave a really good, on your previous answer, as Avi said, you can actually extend as much as you want, because we really like to hear. I mean, this is Cannabis Insider, so insiders have their space here to express themselves. And even though we will be going, like, focusing into the more financial part with Sandy Seafried from Safe Harbor Financials right after you, I still appreciate a lot. I mean, the on the productive side, how the productive side has sees the capital availability that might happen after rescheduling. But now, from a regulatory standpoint, what are the potential hurdles that the industry might face during the transition period before the final rule is published? And maybe if you can think of maybe an advice on how should businesses prepare for this phase?
It's almost a little bit out of my expertise, but I mean the biggest challenge is going to be figuring out, like, the comment period is going to open up, and then it's finally going to close, and the final rules are going to be put in, and then it's the question is going to be, like, is it like, what do I do with my accountants, basically? Like, am I filing 2023 as a regular business? Am I filing part of 2023? And then quarterly, asking for quarterly returns based on it. I honestly, it's just, like, the technical part of how to address 280E with your accountant. And there's many companies, which we haven't gotten there yet because our revenue wasn't quite there. There's many companies that have super complex structures to sort of unwind or untangle, because the structures were created to address 280E. So you'll have, like, a lot of brands that have a marketing company that does all of their non-plant touching stuff so that they can actually deduct. And it's kind of a little bit out of my expertise, like, but it's going to be accounting stuff that needs to be figured out and company structure stuff that was put in place to get around 280E the best way possible and that now has to be, like, normalized. I think that'll be people's biggest challenges. Like, other than that, they're just going to see more margin, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's super interesting. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, Nick, we're going to have to wrap it here, but final question to you is just final thoughts. Just kind of takeaways from everything going on. It's a lot happening at once, but maybe to our viewers, just kind of a final statement on, what you're thinking, your feelings. In general?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm in my little world here in New York, so and everything's opening up here, so it's kind of hard to zoom out and see the greater vision. But, like, our investor who comes from the mining world and is a super, super tough person to deal with in general, just a very, very tough investor. The change that he had as soon as he saw this news and sort of felt like there was a normalization in cannabis was massive yesterday. So I think, like, I need to focus on New York and we need to grow here in New York. But in general, for the entire industry, this is probably the biggest regulatory change that we've seen ever since legalization came about. So, you know, I'm very excited about it. Very excited about it. And I hope everybody makes a little bit more money.
Here's the hope.
Exactly.
All right.
All right. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Nick. It was great talking to you. And again, your insights and your opinions are very valuable to everyone listening.
Thank All right. For your time. Thanks so much, Pato. Thanks, Abby.
Back anytime. Yes, please
Thank
do.
You.
Bye, Nick.
Peace.
All right.
We promise different point of view, and that's what we are providing. These are great conversations.
I think actually we are ready for our next guest. Again, we are kind of zooming through these, but we want to make sure that you're hearing from the experts that you need to hear from on this topic. So without further ado, Pato, do you want to introduce our next guest?
Of course. Now, more on the capital and financial side, as we promised, we are very happy to have Sandy Seyfried, CEO of Safe Harbor Financial. We have talked to Sandy before. She's a leader with over 3 decades of experience in the credit industry. And under her guidance, Safe Harbor has become a trailblazer in providing compliant banking and financial services to the cannabis industry. So, Sandy, do we have you there?
Sandy, how are you doing?
Good.
Welcome to the show.
Of course, thanks. I think we forget about the graphic each time. Again, it's our first time going live for this show, so it's a little bit of a jump scare. But regardless, we're very happy to have you here. Big news coming out of this. It's you can't talk about anything else right now, you know, when it comes to cannabis.
No, I would agree. They probably are all out celebrating today. This has got to be bigger than 420.
Exactly. Yeah, it was not a coincidence that the announcement was made so close to the 420 date. So, Sandy, you're a pioneer force in navigating complex the complex intersections of cannabis and finance, which maybe a couple of days ago seemed like two universes that were a little bit more away from each other than today. So how do you interpret the DEA's reclassification of cannabis as a validation of the financial frameworks you have championed? And what immediate impacts do you foresee for cannabis banking and financing?
Well, I have to say that in terms of the banking environment, the rescheduling isn't as big as it is for the cannabis industry. It's going to open up more lending opportunities. Absolutely. We think it's great because we're going to see two things. We're going to see an influx of capital coming in, and we're going to see more opportunity to loan to companies who were cash flow strapped, right? They were paying so much in taxes. Now, you know, when you're coming to a financial institution and actually doing debt facilities versus investors, we're always looking at that cash flow. We're always looking at the servicing of the debt. We're not looking at the projections that investors would look at for investments. So I really believe that it's going to qualify a lot more of our clients for actual debt facilities. In terms of banking, will it open banking? I think that more of the financial institutions are waiting safer Banking Act, because the big situation, the big risk for financial institutions and directors and officers is the ability to be prosecuted for banking cannabis. That doesn't change. That is all about bank secrecy, and bank secrecy will remain in place. Now, SAFER does speak to the fact that they're going to review bank secrecy, but how fast will that move? This is decades and decades of increasing bank secrecy obligations. What the industry has against them, not against them, but in fact, the matter is there is an illicit market that operates right in plain sight. I mean, we see this even in the states, that they haven't been shut down. And so your legalized entities are competing with those. And until we weed out some of the bad actors, some of the illicit operations, and banking can't do that for them because all our documents are in plain sight, we're going to have the bank secrecy obligations that cause a lot of work for financial institutions. So I think SAFER will bring more banking opportunities in, but this is going to give the industry the ability to grow utilizing debt facilities versus just investment funds. That's my opinion.
And do you think this news might, bring SAFER closer or influence SAFER discussions in any way?
Oh, well, that could go two ways, right? It could be that now Congress and the Senate are saying, we gave you a big bone here. We're not going to do anything else.
Don't bother anymore.
Yeah, but I think it brings it closer. I do. I think that this has been, you know, in play for almost 10 years, 8-9 years. I mean, how many times has it gone up and how many times has it come down? I think that the fact that so many agencies at the federal level could bring rescheduling to this point and we can't get through the Senate and Congress with SAFER sent a very clear message to Washington that maybe you could do something. So I have a feeling because of the election year and because of this rescheduling, it could bring SAFER closer.
Thank you very much.
I'm back. But, switching topics a little bit. So I want to talk about the cost of capital changing and kind of how do you foresee that for the cannabis business in light of this and kind of what factors will maybe drive these changes?
You know, I was having this conversation the other day in terms of cost of capital. And definitely the cost of capital is expensive, but it's also at this point in time, not very liquid for the industry. But that doesn't just happen because it's an industry situation, although that compounds the problem for them having access to capital because limited investors are there, but it's a rising rate environment. And even in a rising rate environment, it costs more in debt facilities where we were giving loans, you know, last year at 8% or 8.5%, the rising rates where the Fed has, you know, increased rate cost to the financial institutions, that means it increases our cost of funds, which then increases loan rates. So it's pushed it up back over 10%. So rising rates are really, you know, hindering in terms of lowering cost of capital. I think when you see the Fed lower rates, which is kind of looking stable at this point in time, you're going to see lower cost of capital in both the capital markets and in debt markets. I think you're always going to see a premium at this point in time because of the obligations that are associated with bank secrecy and the compliance nature of the business. So it's always going to hold a premium, I think, probably until full legalization. And again, until we minimize, you know, the illicit actors that are trying to put their money right into the financial institutions alongside legal operators.
Very insightful answer. And actually, by following up on that, you just mentioned that it will be very likely more liquidity. We might see rates going down. So can you give us a little explanation of what this might mean for the industry or how could this transform into industry growth?
Well, I think, the fact that they won't be subject to 280E increases cash flow immediately. The money that they've had to set aside year over year over year to pay taxes will now be realized on the bottom line versus the IRS. So I think that's the biggest thing I see at this point in time. And when we are making debt facilities to the industry, you know, the biggest thing we look at is their cash flow and their ability to service debt. So now all of a sudden they're going to have the ability to service more debt, which gives them the opportunity to grow. But the influx of capital, I mean, going to a Schedule 3, in our opinion, is taking the perception of cannabis being that Schedule 1, don't go there, it's not a great investment. I think as everything is, I've heard it this morning, it's done incrementally. I think this is going to shed a better light for investors, not only in America, but in Canada, who are watching, who watch our industry quite closely as well. So I think the next thing is going to be that I keep finding interesting is what happens to the international treaties at this point in time. I wish I could hear somebody speak to that topic. How will we get, you know, the World Health Organization or World Bank or the other, you know, international operations to take a look at the scheduling on an international level?
Absolutely. Here, I'm from Argentina. I'm very eager to know exactly the same thing. How is the news in the US going to impact us and other countries that are moving forward with legalization? So yeah, thank you for that, Sandy.
And I want to go into smaller cannabis businesses. So kind of how will it impact them, particularly those who maybe have struggled with financing, benefit from these new banking and lending opportunities? It seems abundant, but you know, everything's up in the air at the moment.
Well, I am a big advocate for mom and pops and the smaller operations. We've seen a lot of M&A activity in the industry, and it really does harm the little guy, but it's also providing an opportunity for them to actually exit the market. Maybe they have been in it since 2008 or 2009, and it's been an uphill battle. So if that makes them more attractive at this point in time, because there's more cash flow again on the bottom line, makes them more profitable, increases their value in the opportunity of an acquisition. But on the other side, they are also going to be able to see the benefit of the bottom line and actually get capital or access to debt. We, you know, we approved a loan today for a line of credit for a very long-term client who's grown, you know, just, you know, from a small operation and is now trying to go over state lines. And what they needed was not necessarily hard capital. They needed line of credit. And that's because what happens is they're so heavily taxed at this point in time, the money comes into the financial institution and 98 or 97% of it goes right back out to support operations, which really makes cash flow difficult for them. So line of credit opportunities are really important to these smaller operators at this point.
Absolutely. And related to that, what do you think are the main regulatory adjustments that you believe are necessary to fully implement the financial benefits of moving cannabis to Schedule 3?
Well, in terms of course, I have to go through the process in D.C. at this point in time, but I think right. Because Biden kind of put that through, I think it's just a matter of timing at this point in time. And I think, again, the fact that it's an election year, things are going to happen probably sooner than later so that people can take credit for it and maybe get some votes. I think that always plays into consideration here. As far as access to, you know, normalized banking, we have to go back to what this industry looks like on a cash basis. It's cash intensive. You know, we can move $6, $7, $8, $9 million a day, you know, from 41 mm-hmm. different states into the financial system. And the issue is it's cash intensive. There are still a lot of people who don't want to use, you know, cards if they're available, which they aren't, and other, you know, cashless payments, because they don't necessarily want to have it on their record. They don't want somebody to be able to pull a statement. I often tell the story that my husband is kind of old school and a little bit older than me, but he'll go buy wine for me once in a while, and he won't pay anything but cash because he doesn't necessarily want anyone thinking he's buying alcohol on his. So you still got some of that old school thinking. COVID did change that. We saw an increase in cashless payments because of COVID, and some of our third-party payment processors really benefited from that. I don't know that this will signal entry for the large credit cards or the major credit cards. I believe that we're still going to have an issue there as long as bank secrecy is as severe as it is, and as long as they have to take responsibility for moving money through the system. And that's the issue. Can't let one of those illicit operators get their hands on a card and put money through major credit card rails. That will kill the program. Until we have that under control, I think you're going to have to wait till maybe full legalization.
Hmm. I want to move on to, you know, investors in this. This is a big topic that we've been talking about as well. Is, do you kind of expect that reclassification to attract more institutional investors to the cannabis sector? And if so, in kind of what ways?
I think it's a perception issue. I think you're going to, you know, up to this point, I think everybody's saying, is the government going to stand behind this industry? Are they going to do anything? This industry's been fighting for over a decade now to get some type of acceptance in terms of capital markets and more importantly, in terms of the federal agencies. And the move that The DOJ is behind this. I mean, if you look at the charter of the DOJ, catch criminals, right? Catch illicit activities, catch all these. And the DOJ is supporting, you know, a movement to Schedule 3. That is a huge vote of confidence from DC. So I believe that the perception is that we're all moving in the right direction, federal agencies and maybe Congress and the Senate this year. So that, you know, I think it's perception issue. This is here to stay. When we started our program way back in 2014, there were two recreational states, now called adult use, and 11 medicinal states. And look where we are today. Who knew in 10 years, but incrementally, it's now 38 states and, you know, 20 plus states. And so it's just a matter of how, you know, those dominoes have fallen. And I think this is that first Washington, D.C. domino that's going to really make investors more comfortable with putting their money into cannabis.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think your perspectives are very valuable to everyone listening now. And I want to make one last question before we wrap up. What role should financial institutions play in educating their stakeholders about the implications and opportunities of cannabis banking post-reclassification?
I think you're going to see it be very similar at this point in time. I think that you still have to, as an industry participant, find those cannabis-friendly financial institutions. And there are a lot of them. The reason that credit might be tight is more of a liquidity issue in a raising rate environment at this point in time. You cannot make loans if you don't have deposits. And what is every financial institution chasing at this point in time? Deposits. So I think that, you know, the perception is different, just like, well, cost of capital go down while you got to have a lowering of the federal funds rate in order to see, you know, cost of capital to go down. I think the education is still the same. I think you see a lot of opportunities out there. I see, you know, at the conferences, I see more and more financial institutions actually setting up booths and educating clients one-on-one. But for the most part, you know, we're getting into those states in advance. We're talking to legislators. We're talking to the market. So I think there's a lot of education going on, and it will continue to go on. The credit issue is the big education. What I see in the market is that the industry participants have been used to presenting to investors who are very much focused on projections and future success. And the difference is now you're going to face lower rates for debt facilities, but the demands on your performance and ability to service that and less on projections is what they're going to find.
Absolutely. And okay, well, this is, again, painting a very interesting landscape for old players and new players that are seeing the cannabis industry as something viable. So, Sandy, we really thank you a lot for your time. Is there any, I mean, how do listeners and viewers can get in touch with Safe Harbor and with you to know more about your services and, again, to leverage this historic moment around reclassification?
Sure. You can still find us at shfinancial.org. And, you know, we have a whole staff of expert onboarders and specialists who can get you through the education process, because it, as is everything with cannabis, it's always an education process. And or they can find me on LinkedIn and I'll get them in touch with somebody as well.
Perfect. Well, yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and your insight today. Yeah. And please come back anytime.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate your time.
Till next time, Sandy. Bye-bye. Have a good day. All right. Well, this was a stacked show. How are you feeling, Abby?
I'm feeling great. I mean, I sometimes want to sit here with popcorn because I'm learning so much more about the market than, you know, actually having these conversations face-to-face via recording. But, it feels hopeful. It feels like there's a long way to go. You know, a lot of the sentiment from these conversations. But yeah, Pato, how are you feeling?
No, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree more with you. I think hope is made out of little victories, and out of doubt, this is one of them. So yeah, happy to live this moment and communicate it along with you. So I think this is close to our first live show together. And and thank you, everyone, for sharing. Well, to all our guests for sharing their thoughts, and also to all our listeners for their support. We had a lot of people seeing us live, and also thank you to everyone who will see these in the future.
I'm deciding right now that we're going to call our viewers buds. Sorry, guys, you're stuck with it. But absolutely.
We asked you how you want it to be called, so now it's our decision.
Now it's our decision. We didn't get a response. So absolutely, we're going to be following the story closely. And of course, diving into the future shows, we will talk about this as well. So make sure that you tune in and learn from the experts that we will have going forward. We will keep you updated, but also remember to stay connected. Follow us on all of our social platforms for the latest in the cannabis universe, and get on Benzinga.com for more comprehensive analysis, news, and details on not-to-miss industry events.
That's right. And Buds, we'll see you on the next episode to continue unraveling more stories shaping the cannabis industry's future. So until then, stay knowledgeable, stay green, and catch you next time. See you, Abby.
See ya.